All right, let's get started. God, Steve's making fun of me. All right. I'm used to it. All right. So, we're continuing in the second part of the United Kingdom. So let's review a little bit from Sunday's lesson. All right. So, who's the main character in the second part of the United Kingdom? It's David, right? Who did we talk about in the last class, though? It wasn't a whole lot of David, was it? And there's a reason for that, and we're going to talk about that here in just a second. But remember, one of the things that was a result of David's sin that we read about earlier, in 2 Samuel chapter 12, what did God say about David? The sword would not depart from his house. All right? He was going to have trouble. He was going to see some consequences from that decision. We'll talk about some of those consequences as we go along also. So just remember that a lot of this is happening, or some of the things that David is doing seems to sort of be snowballing from decisions he's made. Remember the characters that are in play right now. David has, there's three children involved. There's Absalom and Tamar, their brother and sister. Then there's Amnon, who's also a brother, but he's a half-brother. So we got Absalom, Tamar, brother and sister. And then Amnon, he's a brother, half-brother, from another wife of David. And then we have Jonadab, who comes in on the scene. He's a cousin to all of them, from the son of David's brother, Shimeah. So he's a cousin to all of them. So Amnon, remember, we'll just quickly go through this. Amnon really liked Tamar, and you can't go so far as to say he loved her, because nothing about what he did resembles love, but he wanted her. He desired her. He tells Jonadab, Jonadab helps him devise a plan so that he can get her. So they get her alone, and Amnon lays with her. She tries to stop him and even suggests that he marry her. All right? Really, she says it the way the story reads, the way the scripture says, to avoid the shame of what he's about to do. But he doesn't listen to her. And so Absalom, who is Tamar's sister, full sister, he takes care of her, takes her into his house after this, takes care of her, and he takes revenge on Amnon. What punishment did Amnon receive besides what Absalom did? Nothing happened to him. So why didn't anything happen? Privilege of being the king's son? Yeah, I don't know. We can think about things and, talk about things, but we talked about it a little bit last time. David had sinned as well, right? Before this. And as David's thinking about his son having, committed sin of fornication and maybe even as far as rape here, could David be thinking, hey, this is my son. Can I really judge this matter? Do I have the right to judge this matter? You can imagine him thinking that, can't you? I don't know if he did. But I can imagine that. I think that's what I would be doing. What could David have done in that situation? What are the possibilities? He's the king. He's the one, final authority on handing down, punishment, judgment. What could he have done? He could have made the call, right? He could have said, you're guilty or innocent or have, judged the matter. He didn't do that. If he thought himself too close to the situation, what could he have done? Yeah, that's right. So in matters of, remember the cities of refuge, when people would run to the city of refuge because they had killed someone accidentally or on purpose, they'd run to the city. Who would make the call in the city? The leaders, say it again. The priests, the leaders of the city, right? So they would make that call. They'd make that judgment. He could have done that and handed the decision to someone else who wasn't so close to the matter. He didn't do any of that. What did David do? He didn't do anything. He did nothing. He didn't address the situation. He just out of sight, out of mind. He was indecisive. All right. So Absalom flees when this happens. David at one point thinks all his sons have been killed by Absalom. That's corrected, that Absalom had just killed Amnon. So Absalom flees, and he's gone for 3 years. What's David done during this time? Nothing about this matter, right? So 3 years, Absalom's far away. Absalom finally wants to resolve this, and he says he wants to resolve it, whether he should be put to death, whether he should be allowed to return to Jerusalem, back into his father's house. Whatever happens, he engages Joab, a faithful servant of David in his army. And so he engages Joab, and what he does is he sends word, "Joab, help me out with this." Joab ignores him. Of course, Absalom's far away. He's up in Geshur at this point, right? Engages Joab, trying to come back. Joab ignores him, and he sends again for Joab, to help him. Joab ignores him. So Absalom, he wants to get his attention. So Absalom has some fields, apparently, still back in the land. And he has his servants, and this land is next to Joab's land. So he tells his servants, go set fire to Joab's land, to his crop. And so the servants do what they're told to, and they go and set fire to it. And Joab, it gets his attention. He comes, and Joab talks to Absalom, and he says, why did you do this? Absalom said, because you've been ignoring me. And so Absalom finally gets his ear, and he tells him, he says, talk to David, make this right, get us a conversation, and so that I can see David and I can come back. So Joab does that. He comes back, and David and Absalom make nice. Absalom bows before him. David kisses him. All right, so we're past that point. Absalom's back in the land. So he's back in the land, but after this point, David never sees him. All right? So he doesn't want to see Absalom. So 4 years passed from this point on. The next one, this is a good graph that Greg did up, and I added a little bit. So from the point of the incident with Tamar, when he sexually harassed or raped her. Tamar, from that point, 2 years passed. Then Absalom killed Amnon for revenge. 3 years passed while he's up in Geshur, staying away from David. 3 years passed there. Absalom returns. 2 more years pass, and David sees Absalom, And then from this point, that's where we're at. 4 more years pass. So 11 years pass, and we're going to find out the story for today is Absalom's rebellion. So a lot of time has passed. So this is where we were, and I'll flip through these. Absalom, he sets fire to everything, and so David and Absalom make reconciliation. So now Absalom's back in the land, and what's he doing? Well, it appears that at some point during this timeline, Absalom starts wanting to be in charge. Why he did that, we can think about that and discuss it, but we don't know. I don't know. You know, but he essentially becomes a politician as he gets back here into Jerusalem and into Israel. Because what he starts doing is he starts undermining David, the king, his father. And he undermines him by putting himself out there a little bit more. And he puts himself out there as the prince. So, what is the heritage? What's the lineage of who's going to get the throne after David? David's oldest son was Amnon. So he's gone. He had another son that was between Amnon and Absalom, Chileab. We don't read anything else about him. So he must have died at some point early on. So Absalom is the next one in line to receive the throne. He's the next one, oldest of David's sons. So Absalom likely gets the throne when David dies. But Absalom is going to push things along and make it happen quicker. He doesn't like the timeline of letting David passed naturally or whatever. He wants it sooner than that. So he starts endearing the people to him. And he does that by a couple of things. He'll go out amongst the people and he'll have 50 people run before him in this kind of entourage and, you know, put himself out there as the prince. And he also starts undermining David, the king, and his authority. He does so by, you know, when people come toward the city and he engages them. Where are you from? You know, what city are you from? And he engages them just like a politician, and if they're coming with a complaint or some problem or some issue, then Absalom puts himself as, man, I wish I could, you know what, I could solve your problem. If I were just the judge and you know, I see your point, I see, you know, exactly your problem, and you're right. This is not, you know, if I were made the judge, then you'd get exactly what you need here. Isn't that what politicians say? isn't that exactly? So he keeps doing this over time, and you know, whoever that is, you know, Absalom's, you know, I like what I'm hearing from Absalom. I think I'll vote for him. There's no voting going on, but so one of the things I thought of, was there a problem at all? Was there any, I mean, people would come with a complaint and they need a judgment on something. And David was there to make those decisions, or whoever he chose to make those decisions. But what is Solomon doing? He's generating a problem, isn't he? Absalom. Who did I keep wanting to say Solomon. God. All right. If I say that, it's Absalom. So he creates this problem. He manufactures this problem to which he's selling what? The solution. All right. There's a movie I watch occasionally. I don't watch many movies the second time, but it's called The Music Man. It's an old musical. You might have seen it. Anyway, this guy's a salesman. And he's selling band uniforms. All right. That's what he sells. He goes into town to town selling band uniforms. And he goes into this town, and they don't have a band. Much less need a band uniform, right? So he generates a problem. What's the problem? It has nothing to do with uniforms, has nothing to do with bands. There's a pool hall. There's somebody's got a front building, he's going to put in a pool table. Well, there's the problem. You know, it's not billiards, it's not a gentleman's game, it's a pool. And the phrase is pool with a capital P that rhymes with T. Anyway. But he manufactures this problem, and what's the solution? They need a band to keep their kids off the street and out of that pool, the pool room. So he generates the problem, he's got the solution, and he starts selling them uniforms because they get a band and he sells the uniforms. So it's exactly, Absalom generates a problem, comes up with a problem, he's the solution. And, you know, we can see that. It's sometimes it's hard to see. When you're right in the middle of something like that, it's hard to see what somebody's doing and conniving in the situation when you're in the middle of it. You're like, oh yeah, that's right. Absalom, you've got a point here. Right? It takes some wisdom to see through some of those things. So Absalom, he generates the problem, he's got the solution, and what is about to happen is the coup. So Absalom, he goes to David, and he asks permission to go to Hebron to worship. He says that while he was in Gershon, while he was up there, he had made God a promise, essentially, and he had said, if I can get back to Jerusalem, then I'll worship in Hebron. So he asked David permission, and he wants to bring a lot of people with him, from the family, from the servants of all those in the kingdom there. And David's not going to go, but Absalom asked, can the others go? All right. So he takes this large company, this large entourage with him. And while he's there, he's already made the plans. And while he's there and he's sacrificing and worshiping, then he sends for Ahithophel. Well, Ahithophel is one of David's counselors, one within his close company. So he sends for Ahithophel, and at the same time, Absalom has schemed it so that he's got a bunch of guys who are all over the kingdom, and he has it arranged so that when the trumpets blow throughout the nation, the kingdom, that those men and those places will shout out, Absalom is king in Hebron. And the coup, the rebellion, begins. Well, some of those he took up there didn't have any clue about what Absalom was planning. They were innocent in the matter. But there were a lot in the kingdom who he had already turned to him, right? That he'd been working on that for some time. So the trumpet sounds, declarations heard throughout the land. Well, word gets quickly, very quickly, to David, and he realizes the situation, and his servants with him, they say, we'll do whatever you want us to do. And so David makes the the call to flee and to get out of Jerusalem. So he goes. What has happened to David at this point? He's losing control. He's lost control. Right? He's lost respect. How easy was it for people to turn to Absalom rather than staying loyal to the king David? He's become an ineffective leader. It's obvious by what's happening. And David's now going to be hiding once again. How many times have we seen David hiding in his life? A lot, right? Well, this time he's hiding. And you can almost say it's sort of his own fault of the circumstances that just started maybe 11 years ago and have just snowballed and come to this point. So he's hiding from his own son, Absalom, who wants the throne. Well, so David flees, and those loyal to him accompany him. Some who are loyal to him are now with Absalom, such as Ahithophel. But others who are loyal to him stay loyal to him, and they're mentioned as the Cherethites, Pelethites, the Gittites from Gath. Some of these are his close bodyguards, those who have been with him for some time. And as he's making his way, he leaves Jerusalem. He goes out to the east, and he goes toward the Jordan. And as you read the in 2 Samuel chapter 15 there, as he's going away, it's as though the last kind of point where, you know, he kind of stops before they, you know, completely exit. Then he kind of stops right there and lets everyone else pass, and he goes, and they're going by, and he's seeing all these. He actually talks to the Gittites, those from Gath, and encourages them to actually not go with him, because they're foreigners, and, but they are loyal to him and they stay with him and keep going. He convinces some others to actually go back and to stay in Jerusalem. The priests, are named, some of them are there. Let's see if I got them up here. Zadok, Abiathar, and some of the other Levites. Zadok and Abiathar's sons, Ahimaaz and Jonathan are their sons. And also Hushai, is one of the counselors. He convinces all of them to actually stay in Jerusalem and not come with him as he flees. He convinces Hushai, he's an older counselor of David. He convinces him because, look, Hushai, you're going to be a burden as we're running and fleeing and, you know, living out in the, you know, on the land and in the wilderness. You're going to be a burden. Stay in Jerusalem. You will serve me better there. He tells him, actually go ahead and make an alliance and serve Absalom, because David knows that one of his counselors, Ahithophel, has already sided with Absalom. And he knows that Ahithophel has been a very good counselor, very wise. And David prays. He says, please let the council of Ahithophel fall to the ground, to be no good. Well, he prays that, and he also convinces Hushai, another counselor, to go and stay with Absalom, and to be there as another counselor for Absalom, allegiance to him, so that he can help thwart the council of Ahithophel. So he's got that going on. So Hushai ends up being a counterintelligence kind of a fella there in Absalom's court. The priests, the Levites there, Zadok and Abiathar, kind of the same thing. They brought, as David and and everyone was passing and leaving and exiting the city, they bring the Ark of the Covenant actually out to where David and all of them are passing and going. So, and they're offering sacrifices as they pass through. And there's people crying and weeping about this. This is just a really, really, terrible event that's happening, and they're all witnessing this. And as they're worshiping and sacrificing, David encourages them to stay back and to stay there at the temple in Jerusalem. And essentially, Zadok and Abiathar are going to work as kind of the ears to the ground and spies for what's going on there in the city. And their two sons, Ahimaaz and Jonathan, are going to be the runners. All right? So if Abiathar and Zadok hear anything that David needs to know about, they would send, or Hushai, they would give word to the two of them, the two runners, and they would go out and find David and deliver the message. So there's this whole system starting to is put into play as David exits and starts to flee. So, what are some of the things we can think about as we, you know, this is, you know, there's, I mean, this kind of stuff makes for a great movie. We got spies, we got counterintelligence, we've got, overthrowing the kingdom. You know, all of these things, you know, is what we, you know, may go and watch for entertainment. But it's all right here. It's all real. It's live. But, you know, there's some lessons that we can learn from this. And one is, who's this supposed to, this is all about David, right? This whole chronology of David, because David is the main character that we see going through this period and on through the different periods as we go through the history of the Old Testament and into the New Testament. David's an extremely important character. But even though he is such a prominent and special person in this story, he makes some bad calls. He makes some bad decisions. Those are not hidden from us, are they? Those are given to us for our learning, right? So, when you think about David as being the king and leaders in general, must be above reproach. We can think about civic leaders, in our society, in our culture, but even more we can think about here that elders are examples of this. When David sinned, he made some bad decisions. He caused the death of Uriah. Uriah? Is that the right word? Yeah. Yeah. Not Solomon. All right. So he makes some terrible decisions in his life in that instance. And because of the decisions that he's made, is he beyond reproach anymore? He's really not. You think about it. I think Jeff mentioned it last time that he failed as a father. He also failed as a leader. Because look what happens now. When he has to make a judgment, is he totally impartial? When the woman came to him, when the woman of Tekoa, you know, Joab set that up so that the woman of Tekoa came and convinced him of what he'd done wrong, just like Nathan had done for David earlier. Well, the woman of Tekoa was a wise woman, and Joab asked her to do this and tell this story. Well, what was, she convinced him, and he judged that matter, but do you remember what the conversation looked like? she wanted him, the woman of Tekoa, who was this wise person, and Joab knew it, and she was helping him. She needed the king to say, nothing will happen to your son. Not one hair will fall from his head. It took David three times to come to that. For him to commit and make that judgment. Because before that, the first two answers that he gave her were what? Not so committal. Right? But the third time, she kept pressing him, and finally he said it. Your son, not one hair will fall from him. So he made the call finally. But how did David respond when he was the one who had sinned? Do you remember that? Did it take Nathan more than one time? You know, when Nathan said, David, you're the man. David was right on it. He knew immediately the sin that he had. But a little bit further down the road, is David the same? Is he making that same decisive, showing that leadership, making the decision? Joab and this woman from Tekoa, he has to be brought to that in a little bit, right? So, leaders have to be above reproach. We think that's not fair. You know, sin is sin, right? Whether it's for someone of a position or if it's someone, you know, normal, how do we want to say it, of a different position. Sin is sin. But think about, as David makes these decisions, who does he affect? Look at the sphere of influence that David has. It's huge. It is super encompassing. An entire kingdom depends on the decisions that he makes. What about someone else? You know, just a citizen in the kingdom. Sin is sin, definitely. It's the same, but what are the consequences of someone who's just living a quiet, peaceful, normal? His sphere of influence isn't nearly as big, is it? It's not nearly as encompassing. So, are leaders held to a higher standard? Yeah. Should they be? I think so. Because they've got a whole lot more influence. And the sphere of when they make mistakes, it can affect a lot of people when they sin. Yeah, that's a great point. I won't try to repeat all that. that's a really good point. Yeah. And, you know, the consequences of him not treating his children, disciplining his children. Now, these are grown people, you know, about at this point. But it's exactly the same point that you're making. You know, his inability or refusal to do that and to require justice, man, it tears the kingdom apart. I mean, just tears it up. And he's gone. He's exited the city. As he exits, guess who's coming? He enters the city. Absalom's inbound. Yeah, that's a good point. Okay. So let's think about, on the other hand, Absalom. And this is again, you know, we can think about it and personalize it in a sense. What would cause anyone, you know, to do these kind of things? What was it that Absalom, and the scriptures don't tell us, you know, what he was thinking or why he did what he did, but just from a human standpoint, what are the things that cause someone to rebel? You know, look at all the things that are possible. You know, could it have been pride on Absalom's part? I mean, he could have, I mean, and even we can almost see this. It's like, David's not making good decisions. You know, I can do a whole lot better than what, isn't that what, go back to the politicians thing, isn't that pretty much what they do with each other? And I can do a lot better job than what, you know, so-and-so is doing. Mhm. Yeah. 6 pounds of it. Maybe it was. Yeah. Yeah. It's recorded. Yeah. And he. It's one of those things where, and honestly, even today in our elections, who do they put out there to be the in the primaries for us? It's someone who looks like a president, or looks like a, you know, someone they look it. You know, they go into all of the, you know, when you start watching the news or something, they talk about, well, you know, they don't pick ugly people. Doug, you have some. Well, and exactly, you're talking about the respect. He had no respect for David, his father. Well, even one step beyond that is he didn't have respect for God. Remember when David, they tried to give David the throne, right? Back in his early days, they tried to give it to him. Look, we've got to get Saul out of this position. You're the chosen one. Boy, David had everything pushing him to do essentially Absalom. What Absalom was doing, everybody had been pushing David to do that, you know, back in when Saul was on the throne. David would not touch a hair on Saul's head. He had opportunity after opportunity to end it and to take the throne. David respected God's authority. Absalom has no respect for David, has no respect for God's authority. He just wants what he wants. For whatever reason is, you know, going through his mind, he's got the looks, whether it's pride, ambition, you know, whatever it is. Well, David flees. Last one here. And as he flees, he tells, I think it's Zadok, might have been Hushai. He tells him, he's puts the matters into God's hands. And he says, whether God allows me to come back, in fact, it's when he's talking about taking the ark back, back to the temple, back into Jerusalem. He says, whether God allows me to go back or whether or not I ever return, I'm putting it in God's hands. It's in God's hands. And David still has that characteristic. He still is a man after God's own heart. Even though the decisions that he makes, you know, are destructive, you know, for everyone around him, he puts the problem, he puts the matters into God's hands for himself. You know, if I come back, it's at God's pleasure. If I don't come back, it's God's will. And I'm okay with that. If we can do that, if I can do that, then how many problems, how many issues kind of just, you know, go back down? Whatever happens, I'm okay with. Whether I live, like Paul said, whether I die, it's in God's hands. So, that's all my thoughts for tonight. Thank you for listening. Thank you for the comments. We'll take up Sunday with Greg in chapter 16.